Hello, this is the Archaeology News Weekly and I'm David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A Neolithic temple has been discovered in northern Syria. A cash grant is provided to get answers from Scottish prehistoric graves. Ancient burial urns are found in central Vietnam. While an Iron Age settlement in Somerset in England is about to be unearthed. Archaeologists study ancient people in Ohio, USA. And on the last day of work, a prehistoric enclosure is discovered at Brodgar in Orkney. An archaeologist explains that priests may have designed Nazca lines, and in Bulgaria, local archaeologists are fighting to save the pass from gangsters. Grenan Fort restoration in Southern Ireland is an act of cultural vandalism, according to an international sculptor. And finally, 3D rock carvings are recorded with only simple equipment. A team of Syrian-French archaeologists have discovered a Neolithic temple in northern Syria that could be the oldest in the Middle East. The discovery of the temple, dating back to the Neolithic period, was made by a joint Syrian-French archaeological team at Jadid al-Mahkara on the Euphrates River, some 450 kilometres north of Damascus. Objects made of stone and bone instruments were found in the large temple, whose walls bore geometric designs and drawings of bulls' heads in vivid red, black and white colours, further evidence that bulls were worshipped during that period. Research is to be carried out, which will shed new light on the Beaker people of the northeast of Scotland. Aberdeen University has received more than £70,000 from the Leverhulme Trust to allow analysis of 4,000-year-old skeletons and detailed research into the grave goods. The collections of beaker pots and associated skeletons in the university's Marischal Museum are amongst the most important in the UK. The period is seen as a critical point in the transition in prehistory. Neil Curtis, senior curator at the museum, said that they've been studied by a number of scholars, including museum's curator Professor Robert Reed, a century ago. Using new techniques, they're hoping to answer questions that he would have thought quite impossible. The cache will be used to analyse more than 20 beaker skeletons found throughout the northeast and the grave goods that accompanied many of the remains. The beaker culture flourished throughout Europe in the early Bronze Age and got their name from the distinctive clay pots or beakers buried with their dead, suggesting an early belief in the afterlife. Beaker burials in the northeast of Scotland are also associated with the area's recumbent stone circles. Archaeologists have discovered 30 burial jars belonging to 2,500-year-old Sa Huan civilization in central Vietnam. The graves, together with many artifacts, were unearthed at the Con Dai archaeological site. 25 of the jars contained ritual offerings like small trays, agate bowls and earrings, all of them still intact. They will be displayed at the Museum of Vietnamese History and the province's own museum. The archaeologist said the excavation provided further evidence that the early Middle Age culture had once existed in central Vietnam. The Sa Huan culture has been dated to roughly the same time as the Dong Son culture, around about 1000 BCE to 200 CE, but it has a distinctive decorative style on its bronze axes, daggers and ornaments. In a burial practice unique to their culture, it cremated its dead and buried their ashes in urns covered with lids, together with richly broken offerings. Archaeologists will soon be uncovering a rare Iron Age settlement in a North Somerset village in England. The ancient site at Goblin Coombe Environmental Centre in Cleve is the only known Iron Age settlement in Britain not yet to have been dug up. The trees and plants currently covering the site will be cleared this winter in preparation for a team of archaeologists to study the site in detail. A group of 45 pupils from Broadoak Mathematics and Computing College in Weston started the work this week by helping to clear some of the trees. Centre manager Kenton Keyes said that they took the site over in 2003 as a trust, and before that time there was no management plan in place and very little thought had been put on how to deal with the site. They started talking to English Heritage and English Nature, who were very interested in making more of it, and established that it was an Iron Age site, and the only one in Britain which has not yet been excavated in any way. The first thing that needs to be done is to take down the trees and remove the roots to make sure that the site is still preserved. all they know about it, it is a settlement site where people would have lived. At the moment, it looks like a large horseshoe with a distinctive mound with a series of platforms and levelled areas. It's most likely to be here for trading goods dug from the earth, with goods coming in from the coast. I know archaeologists from the area are keen to get started on the site, but English Nature will decide when archaeologists will be allowed, officially and formally, on to excavate. For the past three summers, a team of Cleveland Museum of Natural History archaeologists and volunteers have been teasing secrets from what's called the Danbury site in Ohio, USA. The excavation on private property amid a construction site is a model of cooperation amongst researchers, the developer, and American Indian representatives. They've all agreed that after the study, the human remains and burial artifacts will be returned back into the earth. The excavation has uncovered evidence for a gathering place of native peoples that far outlasted the great cities of the Greek and Roman empires. Its history stretches across the archaic, woodland and prehistoric periods, spanning more than 4,000 years. The first inhabitants were still semi-nomadic and hunters, who may have spent just a few weeks at the lush wetland sites, fishing, catching waterfowl and burying their dead. Later occupants grew maize, built more permanent seasonal settlements, and had more sophisticated burial customs. Brian Redmond, the Natural History Museum's archaeology curator and director of the dig, said that it is a place where groups were coming together maybe every year. There's trading, religious rituals, including burial of the dead, and maybe even marriage ceremonies going on. The place is full of stories. The 3 years of work at Danbury have provided valuable insights into a poorly understood group that left no written records and apparently had no direct contact with later people who could have described them. The few spear points found at Danbury indicate that hunting was not a major activity there, which probably occurred further inland. The abundance of fish scales and clam and mussel shells show that occupants did, however, take advantage of the rich ecosystem around them. Dozens of storage pits held fish, corn, and other foodstuffs. Local clay deposits supplied material for some of the earliest cooking pots in the Great Lakes area, dating to around 1000 BCE. Danbury pottery was hand-moulded with simple decorative markings made by cords or sticks wrapped around rope. Tools recovered from the dig, including part of a grinding stone, some stone hand axes, a sharper piece of raccoon leg bone used as a punch or awl, and also a rasp made of a deer's rib that somebody may have scraped as a percussion instrument during a religious or magical rite. Danbury's most striking features are its graves. The museum team has recovered the remains of close to 100 people. Nearly half the dead are children younger than 5, a testament to disease and the harsh living conditions of the time. There was no signs of any violent death, though. The site functioned as a cemetery throughout its long history, the earliest graves dating to at least 2480 BCE, with burial practicings changing over time. There are individual plots, secondary burials, whose sometimes cleaned and bundled bones were brought from another location, and ossuaries or mass graves. Some of the bones were stained with copper or powdered red ochre, resembling blood. Sometimes they were disarticulated, removed from their natural position, and rearranged in unusual ways. Workmen building a new visitor car park for the Ring of Brodgar in Orkney, Scotland, have unearthed what could be the remains of a huge prehistoric walled enclosure between Stennis and Harry Lochs. Construction work was halted last week following the discovery of a segment of wall on the site. The find turned up on the last day of a watching brief, where archaeologists were monitoring operations to ensure that no archaeological remains were disturbed or damaged. The site lies a few hundred yards to the north of the stone circle by the shore of Harry Loch and on the Sandwick side of the Ness of Brodgar. Orkney Archaeology Trust's projects manager Nick Card said they originally thought it might be part of a medieval ruin, but it soon became clear that what they had was extremely well built and appeared to be very much older. The structure was right at the very edge of the proposed car park, and although pieces had been removed in more recent past, it turned out to be a massive, beautifully built wall about a metre across and surviving in some parts up to around 30 centimetres. Going back to the aerial photographs that they had of the area and studying them closer, it appears that what was originally thought to be a geological feature was in fact a prehistoric wall continuing out across the Ness in a massive arc. It's early days yet, but the wall seems to have been formed a huge circular enclosure with an estimated diameter of 100 metres. This, together with its proximity to the Ring of Brodgar, is very interesting and potentially incredibly important to our understanding of the area and its uses. To give an idea of the size of the enclosure, the nearby Ring of Brodgar itself has a diameter of 103 metres. The archaeologists plan to use resistivity scans to provide a clearer picture of the extent of the construction. This involves passing an electrical current through the ground at regular points on a survey grid. Because electrical resistance in the soil varies and is affected by the presence of archaeological features, the patterns of resistance in the soil can be recorded, plotted, and then interpreted. Meanwhile, to preserve the ancient wall, the car park is being moved a few metres to an area clear of any archaeology. High priests at an ancient religious compound in southern Peru may have designed the mysterious Nazca lines, a set of huge geometric patterns, animal figures and long lines etched in the desert, the area's top archaeologist has said. Researchers say the Cahuachi compound, built in 400 BCE, is just across the Nazca Valley from the lines, one of Peru's most popular tourist attractions and a UN World Heritage Site. It's logical to think that the Nazca people's religious beliefs originated in this ceremonial site and was expressed on the wide open plain, said Italian archaeologist Giuseppe Orefici, who leads the research at Cahuachi. Geographical proximity is not the only evidence of links between the two ancient sites. The same religious icons appear at the lines and on ceramics and crafts excavated at the compound. The Nazca lines, best viewed from the air, were made by clearing away surface stones or piling them up into small heaps. Among its most emblematic figures is a giant monkey with a spiral tail. Luck is only sometimes on the side of Bulgaria's archaeologists as they race gangsters to unearth the treasures of the ancient Thracians. Last month, archaeologist Daniela Agri came across a Black Sea hotel owner flattening a 2,000-year-old burial mound and there found a hoard of gold and silver jewellery that she thinks belongs to a Thracian princess. Another archaeologist was served in a remote rural shop by a woman wearing a string of 5,000-year-old gold beads found by her husband in sunflower fields where a large Thracian treasure trove was later discovered. Famed for their ferocity and horsemanship, the Thracians, who lived between modern-day Ukraine and Turkey, were long considered a barbarian race whose greatest contribution to history was Spartacus, the slave who rebelled against Rome. But just as a series of spectacular finds is deepening their understanding, academics fear that the violent mafia are beating them to it for vital pieces of the historical jigsaw. Gavral Lazov, head of archaeology at Bulgaria's National History Museum, is celebrating another remarkable find while lamenting his country's failure to crush crime. Last month, his colleagues unearthed 20,000 Thracian ornaments, and one dagger was even made of platinum and gold. 5,000 years old, and still so sharp a man could shave with it. Indeed, the riches of Thracia may rival those of ancient Troy. The most spectacular find is a 2,500-year-old burial mask of a Thracian ruler, a solid gold visage more than 10 times heavier than the mask of Agamemnon, which is the centrepiece of the National Archaeology Museum in Athens. Bulgaria has more ancient artifacts than any other European country, except perhaps Greece and Italy, said Lazov, with 15,000 Thracian burial mounds and 400 ancient settlements known already. But it is terribly hard to protect them all, and looting has boomed since the end of communism 15 years ago. Under pressure from Brussels, Bulgaria has tightened border controls and pledged to crack down on crime, but in a country where the average monthly wage is £120, Lazov fears that the criminals will always prosper. Internationally acclaimed sculptor Maurice Harron has branded restoration work at the Greenan Fort in County Donegal, Ireland, as a gross act of cultural vandalism. Mr. Harron says that as a result of ongoing restoration works, the historic monument has dramatically changed shape. The restoration work, he insists, should stop immediately, and expert stonemasons brought in to try and undo the damage that they've already done. However, the Office of Public Works, which is overseeing and carrying out the work, insists its intervention will not only considerably improve the future stability of the monument, but also ensure safe public access to the site. The Office of Public Works says its conservation design team at the Greenan of Ailech site includes specialist archaeological and engineering consultants, and that all work is being overseen by an expert team from its Heritage Services branch. Maurice Haran, however, maintains that the original loose stone techniques used to construct the pre-Christian stone fort, known as corbelling, and giving the structure its wonderfully subtle curved wall surface, has been abandoned and that the walls are now being knocked down in 15-foot sections and rebuilt flat and straight. As a result, says Mr. Haran, the wonderful round fort is now a polygon. There's no blame on the workers themselves, but on those who planned and are supervising this carry-on deserve to be criticised, he said. They're using contemporary building techniques and materials, presumably in an effort to make the building more safe and functional. However, this fort was not built to be safe and functional. It's an extraordinary evocative structure, which has survived for more than 2,000 years. In response to Mr. Haran's concerns, the Office of Public Work in Dublin revealed that following a series of major collapses, the monument was placed in state care in 1904. A spokesman said that local repairs were carried out at the time, but due to the unsatisfactory nature of the restored external masonry works, sectional collapse continued at regular intervals. A specialist structural engineering and archaeological survey undertaken in 2001 revealed the lower original sections of the wall and confirmed the reasons for the monument's instability. The original inward leaning and stable profile and the line of the wall was established, and the monument is now being restored to that original design. The present intervention should considerably improve the future stability of the monument and ensure safe public access at the site. A method of imaging rock carvings in 3D using everyday electronic equipment could help document decaying carving before they disappear forever. Archaeologists are struggling to document many rock carvings before they are eroded by pollution or weather. Bulky laser scanners can capture detail in 3D down to 0.2 millimeters. However, such instruments are very costly and cumbersome if for general use. A system being trialled by archaeologist Carl Sognes and colleagues at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology and the Foundation for Scientific and Industrial Research at Trondheim provides a much simpler and cheaper solution. It consists of an ordinary office projector, a digital camera, and a laptop running specially developed software. They're trying to find something cheaper because laser scanners were so large and expensive. And in some places, they're coming to the end of the rock carvings and they hope to develop and document them before they are gone forever. Sognes has been testing the simple scanning setup on carvings held at the Museum of Natural History and Archaeology in Trondheim. The carvings date from the Scandinavian Bronze Age between 900 and 800 BCE. The equipment will also be tested this week on a site north of Trondheim, which features carvings of boats, elks and whales dating back to around 6000 BCE. To scan a carving, the projector is used to illuminate it with stripes of light and dark, and the digital camera records the resulting pattern for analysis on the laptop. The technique has been dubbed structured light. Although not as accurate as a laser scanner, it is sufficient to reveal distinctive marks made by the different types of tools. Looking at these tools is used to help age the carvings. They can also use this technique to look for signs of how erosion is happening or to distinguish very weathered hidden carvings from surrounding rock. Tertia Barnett, an archaeologist documenting rock carvings in Northumberland in the UK, said there is an urgent need for cheaper scanning solutions. Laser technology is changing, but it's still very bulky and expensive. It takes a lot of time to get it into place for a scan. Barnett has been testing another cheap solution that involves taking two normal digital photos from different positions and turning these into 3D images on a computer. This can reveal details of about 2 millimeters in size, but Barnett believes a structured light method could be even better. A cheaper method with higher accuracy would be a great help in all of this. So on that positive note, can I remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, a library and guidance section, and now the Badger Report on the rally held at Thornborough Henges, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And remember that more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thank you very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again to us next week.